Radio Prague News.
The Czech Environment Minister Jan Dusík has stepped down over a conflict with the energy giant ČEZ. The police have requalified a recent arson attack on a Romani family as attempted murder. And the International One World Festival of Human Rights Documentaries concludes in Prague. Czech Environment Minister Jan Dusík stepped down on Thursday over a conflict with the energy giant ČEZ. The Environment Ministry was due to issue an environmental impact assessment concerning the modernization of the ČEZ-run coal power plant Prunéřov. However, a study commissioned by the ministry and released on Thursday showed that ČEZ was not going to use the best available technology. Mr. Dusík told the news conference that his ministry refused to issue the permits and was going to ask the energy producer to review the project. But Prime Minister Jan Fischer told him to allow ČEZ to go ahead with the existing project. Minister Jan Dusík, who was nominated for the post by the Greens, then decided to step down. The police in Ostrava requalified on Thursday a recent firebomb attack on a local Romani family as attempted murder. The crime was originally investigated as a threat to public safety. The offenders will now face up to 15 years in prison. The police said the arson attack was requalified over suspicions it may have been racially motivated. The police have also set up a special unit to investigate the case, composed of specialists who worked on similar cases in the past. The firebombing took place in Ostrava on Saturday when a Molotov cocktail was thrown into the home of a local Romani family. The bottle landed in the bedroom of a 14-year-old girl who was able to extinguish the burning bottle before it caused further damage. In April of last year, a Romani family in the Moravian town of Vítkov was the victim of a racially motivated arson attack, and another such incident took place in September in Mikulov in southern Moravia. The One World International Festival of Human Rights Documentaries concluded in Prague on Thursday after having announced the winning films. The Best Film Award will go to the British-Cambodian documentary Enemies of the People, which follows the journalist Thanh Sambat as he tracks down former members of the Khmer Rouge in his native Cambodia. The Polish film Chemo, about patients of a Warsaw Oncology Clinic, will receive the Best Director Award. The Rudolf Verba Award for the Best Film in the Right to Know category and the Václav Havel Special Award for films that uniquely contribute to the defense of human rights will both go to the Indian film The Sun Behind the Clouds about the Chinese occupation of Tibet. The One World Festival was held in Prague between the 10th and 18th of March. More than 32,000 people saw at least one of over 100 films screened at the festival, which in March and April will continue in some 30 cities and towns around the Czech Republic. And finally, a quick look at the weather. The end of the week will be partially cloudy with rain showers in most places. Highest day temperatures should rise up to 16 degrees Celsius. My name is Jan Richter and it's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Velinger. Coming up in today's program, the Czech Republic comes under criticism from Amnesty International for exporting torture equipment. We look at a proposal by the Education Ministry for the Romani language and culture to be taught in schools. Plus, be sure to stay with us for today's panorama in which Chris Johnstone looks at the story of Burmese refugees who have begun new lives here but are not always met with understanding.
Czech society is also not very much familiar with different foreign cultures, particularly why these refugees ended up in this country.
That's all ahead. We begin with this. The Czech Republic has come under fire in a report by human rights watchdog Amnesty International for exporting torture equipment to countries where they are likely to be used. Amnesty says the export of items like shackles that give electric shocks raise real concerns that clear EU rules banning trade in torture equipment are being breached. Chris Johnstone has the story.
The Amnesty International report, called From Words to Deeds, highlights loopholes in European Union rules dating from 2006, which aimed at stamping out trade in torture equipment by countries in the 27-member bloc. The step was heralded at the time as a landmark move to counter torture and bolster human rights. The Czech Republic stands out in the report for a series of export approvals between 2006 and 2008 to countries where Amnesty says there was a high risk that the equipment would have been used to torture prisoners or political dissidents. Export approvals were given for electric shock devices, chemical sprays and shackles to these countries with a dubious human rights record. David Nichols is in charge of foreign affairs at Amnesty International's EU office in Brussels.
There are a number of exports that have been granted to regimes such as Georgia, Pakistan, Mongolia, Senegal, where there is evidence of torture. We're still waiting a reply from the Czech government on whether the actual items that were exported, what the destination of those items was.
Mr. Nichols suggests the Czech approvals point out serious flaws in the way the supposed ban is being implemented in practice.
We want to have a response from the Czech government on how, despite this system, they still actually exported security equipment to regimes of torture, such as Pakistan and Senegal, where there is obviously widespread evidence of torture, not just documented by us and other NGOs, but also by the UN and by their international bodies.
In its favour, the Amnesty report does spell out that the Czech Republic was just one of seven EU countries, along with Britain, Spain and Germany, that came clean on where it approved exports in recent years. The other 20 EU states did not reply to repeated demands. Mr. Nichols says some countries clearly do not know what is happening with regard to their own exports. He adds that some have denied local companies are producing torture equipment, although Amnesty has proof that they are. The Czech Republic also did refuse exports of equipment that could have been used for torture to Iran and Azerbaijan. According to media reports, the Iranian request was for 200 electric stun guns and for pepper spray. The Czech Ministry of Foreign Affairs, which has the last word on export approvals, says it sways up all export requests on a case-by-case basis and takes account of United Nations reports on torture and respect of human rights, as well as information from local diplomats.
Chris Johnstone reporting. Turning to another story now, the Education Ministry has proposed introducing lessons in the Romani language and culture in schools to encourage Roma pupils and foster greater integration in society. The plan, reported this week by the newspaper Lidové Noviny, is still in the early stages, and the ministry will launch the pilot project at schools, selected schools. But it's been welcomed by NGOs working to improve educational standards among the Roma. And Rob Cameron joins me now in the studio to tell us more about the proposal.
That's right. Well, remarkably, Jan, Romani language and culture does not feature on the mainstream Czech school curriculum nationwide. And some enlightened members of the Education Ministry want to change that. They've chosen, basically, for this pilot project, a number of schools in the country with high proportions of Romani pupils. And they want to start introducing lessons in both the Romani language and in Romani culture and history at the schools to see if the plan is a success. If it is, then it'll be rolled out in schools across the country.
So I take it that the lessons won't only be for Roma students, but for all of the students in the classroom.
That's right, very much so. They want, obviously, to encourage learning among Roma pupils, but also they want to make Romani culture and Romani history and information about the Roma more available to the non-Roma kids in the classes, in the belief that if young Czech kids know more about the Roma pupils who sit in the classrooms with them, then they'll foster greater understanding and tolerance in wider Czech society.
And what about the response? Is it fair to say that largely positive so far?
Well, certainly NGOs working to improve educational standards among the Roma have welcomed it. Several have said it's a fantastic idea and it's long overdue as well. But whether it will reach wider approval in Czech society, who knows? That's more difficult. After all, we do already know that, for instance, those as Romani pupils who stay in the mainstream Czech educational system tend to end up in Roma-only schools, because white parents, if they perceive the schools as gypsy schools, they'll simply take their kids out and the schools become effectively Roma-only schools. So whether it will be popular in majority society remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly will be very interesting to watch how this project unfolds. Thanks to Rob Cameron for that. Now, the National Library is currently holding a special exhibit of the work of the very first printing press in Bohemia. The 7 original works made by anonymous printers in Buzeng in the late 15th century have been out of the public eye for 34 years. And foremost among them is the Trojan Chronicle, which for more than 100 years has been at the center of debate over when Czechs first began printing. Christian Falvey has the story.
The name of the Mysteries of the Trojan Chronicle exhibition at the National Library refers to what is often considered the first book printed in Bohemia, a tale of the Trojan War bearing the date 1468. If, as is often assumed, that means the year in which it was printed, it would be the first printed work in the Czech lands. But the curator of the exhibition, Kamil Bodal, says the aim of the exhibit is to dispel myths rather than ponder mysteries.
The older generation, namely that of the National Revival, claimed that the date in the book is real and that book printing in Bohemia began in 1468. That would make Czechs the second nation to know the secret of Gutenberg's invention. That would be nice. But in the second half of the 20th century, a new generation wanted to correct this error, and they wrote a series of articles to prove that printing began here in 1476, and that the first printed work was the Statutes of the First Archbishop of Prague.
Convincing as these arguments were, counter-theories persist to this day in publications of all kinds. The National Museum has therefore tried to set the record straight using watermarks in the paper that can date with relative precision.
The watermark tests have shown that the Trojan Chronicle is truly from the mid-1480s, like all of the early Czech prints. Basically, book printing began in the Czech lands around 1476. They first printed in Latin, and only later were Czech titles printed.
The exhibition only begins with the Mystery of the Trojan Chronicle. It includes a wide range of other work from the era aimed at presenting the changes that printing brought towards the end of the Middle Ages. On display at the National Library are also some of the first prints made in other countries, fragments of Gutenberg's own originals, as well as some of the wooden tools used for illustration that predated Gutenberg and upon which he innovated.
Radio Prague's Christian Falvey. And if you're interested, you can see the Mysteries of the Trojan Chronicle exhibit at the National Library. It will be there until the end of May. From that, we go to the One World Film Festival in Prague. A Rwandan woman describes how her baby was pulled from her back and beaten to death before her eyes in My Neighbor, My Killer, which is being screened at the One World Festival of Human Rights Documentaries in Prague. The film focuses on the local tribunal system called Gacaca, set up following the 1994 genocide in Rwanda, in which the victims give testimony against the perpetrators who in many cases live alongside them. Ian Willoughby spoke to the director of My Neighbor, My Killer, Anne Ashian.
I've been working in Rwanda for 10 years now, and I first went because I met several justice officials from Rwanda who were traveling in the United States, and I remember very distinctly the night I met them. They told me about the Gacaca, which was an idea at that point, and I remember thinking immediately, that's a film. You know, it's interesting. It's almost like the subject grabs you before you know it. I didn't know it was going to take 10 years, obviously, but here I am.
What is the legal status of these Gacaca tribunals, and is it the case that the accused have already been imprisoned?
It's a little more complicated than that. Basically, the Gacaca are not quite done yet. I think they're wrapping up any minute now in the next couple of months. Over 1 million people have been tried. A lot of the people who have been sentenced by the Gacaca or have gone through the Gacaca have not gone to prison. I would say the majority have not gone to prison. They're either going to do community service or simply perhaps go to prison for some of them, but mainly not.
Have these tribunals led to a diffusion, so to speak, of tension in the local communities, or have they perhaps led to an increase with the stirring up of old embers, so to speak?
I think that's very, you know, the genocide didn't unfold in a uniform fashion in Rwanda, and the Gacaca are not unfolding in a uniform fashion. There's a lot of local dynamics involved. Whether the Gacaca will in the end work is something we'll know in a couple of generations. Today, there are some very well publicized acts of violence in Rwanda every once in a while, but for the most part, everything is under check.
Is it possible to compare these Gacaca tribunals to mechanisms in other post-conflict states, like, for example, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa?
It's actually very, very different from the Truth and Reconciliation in South Africa. What you have in Rwanda is really the most ambitious ever attempt at total justice. I mean, there was really a conscious attempt to nail each individual crime to each individual perpetrator. And there's also sentencing.
And that was Anne Ashian, a maker of My Neighbor, My Killer, speaking to Ian Willoughby. Now, Ian, we'll have one last report from the One World Festival, which ends in Prague on Thursday night in this week's Arts that airs on Friday. But that brings us to our main feature for this day about how refugees from Burma are beginning new lives in the Czech Republic. And Chris Johnstone presents this week's panorama.
That was a father from one of nine Burmese families who are now making a life for themselves in the Czech Republic. He explains how he fled his country after coming under suspicion from the ruling military regime of having helped rebels. The 43 Burmese refugees from the Chin ethnic group are the first to be offered asylum in the Czech Republic under a project organized with the United Nations. Another group should follow soon. Director of the Burma Centre in Prague, Sabe Amthor So, has been closely involved in the project and helping families settle in. I asked her, first of all, who the refugees are and why they fled their homeland.
Chins belong to one of the seven major ethnic groups in Burma, and like other ethnic groups, they are very often targets of the Burmese army, not only because of their political activities, but also because they belong to Christian religious groups, and Burmese army try to Burmanize these ethnic groups by forcing them to convert into Buddhism, or these people are often victims of the Burmese army to work forced labor for constructions of the army needs, roads and army camps.
The families that have come to the Czech Republic, how did they get out of Burma, and where did they go first of all?
In fact, the Burmese who left Burma often go to the neighboring country because this is the first destination where they can reach. The refugees who came to the Czech Republic run away from Burma up to Malaysia.
And many of these families were waiting a long time before they could get a host country, such as the Czech Republic?
Yes, some people have to wait up to 10 years. There are a lot of cases that children were born in the refugee camps and they have never visited a school until they are resettled to another host country.
When they were told that they were coming to the Czech Republic, did they have much of an idea what to expect?
As far as I am informed, the refugees who had been selected to be resettled into the Czech Republic were provided a kind of like a short course of orientation about the Czech Republic and about the Czech culture and the conditions of life in the Czech Republic. I would say that this was very brief and very little, and for the people who have never experienced similar things inside Burma nor in Malaysia. I assume that they didn't have any proper idea what was ahead of them. When they arrived, they were accommodated in a facility run by the Ministry of Interior of the Czech Republic up to 8 months, where they learned the Czech language, and at the same time they were informed about the daily routines of the other people, other Czech people.
And where are most of these families now? Are they in one group or are they dispersed a bit? Or
they were not able to stay in one place. It was all the refugees families were provided so-called integration flats owned by the municipalities, and these flats are very rare in the Czech Republic, and there was no possibility to accommodate them in one town or one location. Nevertheless, the ministry tried their best to accommodate them in one region. So most of them are accommodated now in the southern Moravia or in Vysočina area, the fathers, and only one family was left in the Bohemia area close to Podjebrady.
What have been some of the biggest problems for these families?
There are a series of problems because of the big differences of in their social cultural background. Of course, Burmese people are used to eating rice on a daily basis, and here rice is quite expensive, so their diet habits are also not very much economical for the Czech conditions. Second thing is, of course, the weather. They don't have experience how to dress in for winter, and when they arrive during winter months, it has been quite tough for them to learn how to wear socks and how to wear proper shoes when they go out. Another thing is the cultural differences. Of course, in Burma, people are still receiving foreigners as guests. Here, the situation is a little bit different, and the Czech society is also not very much familiar with different foreign cultures, particularly why these refugees ended up in this country and why we have to provide them some help.
Have any of them succeeded in getting jobs or integrating in some sort of sense in that way?
Most refugee parents are now working in cooperation with the labor offices. They got some subsidies to employ the refugees, even though their language knowledge or other professional knowledge are not yet sufficient to get a normal employment. So most of these people are now working. Of course, the question is how they will continue after this subsidy will finish.
And are the children adapting maybe better than the parents? So how is it for them?
Children are much faster, much faster learners concerning the language. The smaller, the better. The smaller children are now very capable to communicate in the Czech language. Of course, they also had to learn a lot of new things, like, as I say, the diet habits, how to eat together with other students at schools, because they have never experienced how an European dish looks like and in which order you have to eat. So, for example, small children were eating fruit dumplings together with potato soup, and the teachers were totally shocked. So these are things what children also had to learn.
Do the families believe that they will be here in the Czech Republic more or less forever, or do they in some way hope that one day when the worst is over that they will go back?
Well, it will depend on them. It will be definitely individual decisions, but I myself would be happy if some of them could contribute back into the recovery process of Burma once the country is free and democratic. As far as I know, they all miss Burma, they all miss their relatives, their friends, and they all miss their food, their country, their homeland. I'm quite sure that some of them may definitely want to return, but the most important thing is how they will make use of their present stay in the Czech Republic, where they are free and they can learn a lot from practically what democracy means.
This week's Panorama was written and presented by Chris Johnstone, and it brings us just about to the end of today's program. Don't forget, though, you'll find more news and stories at our website, radio.cz, always worth visiting. I'm Jan Wellinger for all of us here at Radio Prague. Thanks for joining us, and take care.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, ondes courtes. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Europe de l'Ouest, 5930. 8h30, 8h57, Europe du Sud-Ouest, Afrique du Nord-Ouest, 11600. 14h30, 14h57, Europe du Sud-Ouest, Afrique du Nord-Ouest, 11600. 17h30, 17h57, Europe de l'Ouest, 5930. 19h30, 19h57, Europe de l'Ouest, 6200, 23h, 23h57, Amérique du Nord, 5930. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute également sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz. Puis choisir le français en haut de la page d'accueil. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site internet www.radio.cz.